Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the most important, fastest growing, and now largest segment of society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, military, economic, and academic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, they can't be fixed. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, is 877-376-45. Well, a brief Israeli truce to allow aid to reach Palestinians, as if there were such a thing, ended on Monday amid accusations of strikes by both sides, which means that Hamas continued to use every opportunity to do what it is chartered to do, kill Jews. While Jerusalem was rocked by two attacks that appear to be a backlash against the war in Gaza. These mythical people that parade around the world as Palestinians, well, mythical in two different ways. One is they're inhuman. Islam actually causes a person to be inhuman. It is the most caustic religion ever conceived by man. The moment a person becomes a Muslim, they lose the ability to be human in the sense of moral, in the sense of having a conscience, in the sense of contributing to society. And so they're mythical in the sense of they've given up their humanity to become religiously outraged. And, of course, the moment you sink to accept the myth of Palestinian, you show yourself to be an ignoramus. Well, this is a Reuters article. But the same would be true if we're reading the New York Times or the Washington Post or the BBC. They all make the same mistake. And when everybody makes the same mistake, and the mistake is obvious, it does say a lot about the nature of our world today. There is no such thing as a Palestinian. There never has been a Palestinian. There were Philistines, but the last of the Philistines were obliterated by the Assyrians 2,600 years ago. And so to call a people Palestinians when there is no such thing, to call a place Palestine when there never was such a place, is to buy into a lie, is to promote a lie. Now, if you're a journalist and you're promoting a lie, what does it say about you? You know, you've chosen an occupation where the principal goal of that occupation is to inform, and rather than informing, you're providing disinformation. This is not a small thing to link oneself to a mythical nation and a mythical people. I mean, the whole purpose of the Palestinian myth is to create a bogus claim to land which is not theirs. And anyone who buys into this myth should be ashamed of themselves. I mean, if they still have a conscience, if they're capable of rational thought, they would be ashamed. Go ahead, Scott.
It also really shows how easy it is to get people to be politically correct and yeah. Like how bad that really is, because this doesn't exist. This is something that it does not exist. It's been eradicated. And now, due to their ties to the media and things like that, they've got it to become a politically correct thing that you can't say what you just said.
Yeah, over 2,500 years ago, the Philistines, which were never Palestinians, were obliterated. I mean, and it's not only that the Philistines haven't existed for 2,500 years. It's that the Muslims in Israel have no affinity whatsoever, no link, not genetic, not political, not of any kind to the Philistines of old. So it's not politically correct. It's just flat out incorrect. But you're right, because this notion of political correctness, which was born out of a hatred for all things Yahweh, including his land and his people. To be politically correct is to be opposed to all things Yahweh, Yisraelites and Yisrael. And so, since political correctness dominates the media, no one in the media can point out the lie. And it also, as you said, it shows something else. And that is that lies can be widely held. You know, for example, there is no reason whatsoever that any American should support or admire the U.S. military. Those in the military don't admire it, which is why some 80 vets are taking their lives every day. Almost 30,000 a year because of the horrendous abuse that takes place in the missions of the U.S. military. They have not fought to provide American freedom as they're often credited with doing. And so you look, and that's the last bastion of unified American respect in this society, and it's wholly and completely misplaced. But like Palestinian, it is repeated so frequently from so many different places that an outright lie is embraced as true. And it is truly amazing that you can take a lie as egregious as this myth that the U.S. military provides freedom for Americans, or the myth that there's such a thing as a Palestinian people in a place called Palestine. And you can promote those myths as if they are absolutely true, but beyond that, that anyone who would dare speak against either is considered a nut. And I dare say, you know, when you point out the fact there is no such thing as a Palestinian people, no such thing as Palestine, and the present Muslims there have no affinity whatsoever to the civilization that went extinct 2,500 years ago, the so-called scholars, the so-called enlightened individuals, literally have no interest of even trying to engage to justify their lie. That's simply slander the person who's pointed out the truth. And, by the way, I mean, there is no sane attempt to justify these tariffs. There is none. It is so obviously untrue that no one is attempting to justify them. They just are applying them. And the lie has become so widespread that most people read right through it. Indeed, sad. Anyway, this article from Reuters says the Palestinians and Israel, as if they're, you know, which creates an artificial conflict. The conflict is not from a group of people called Palestinians. I mean, that's the harm in this, because there is no such thing as a Palestinian people. Who is on the other side of the conflict with Israel? And that's what's being hidden by the lie that is Palestinian. The conflict with Israel is being promoted by Muslims. Full stop. Islam is the most anti-Jewish, anti-Israeli, anti-God religion ever conceived. Well, these mythical people claim that Israel bombed a refugee camp in Gaza, killing an 8-year-old girl and wounding 29 other people in an air attack after the start of the truce. And, of course, I'm sure they're being blamed right now by the United Nations for doing that very thing. And yet the Israeli military said there have been no airstrikes. Sorry. If an 8-year-old girl died and 29 other people were wounded, it's because the Muslims shot mortars and rockets that either deliberately landed in the refugee camp to create this negative propaganda against Israel, or that they couldn't aim. They killed their own. But truth has never been an Islamic virtue. There is no instruction etched in stone in Islam to not bear false witness. As a matter of fact, the Quran says exactly the opposite, that Muhammad and Allah lie, that they renounce their vows. And Muhammad in the Hadith tells Muslims that it's absolutely appropriate to lie to make a victim easier prey. The Israeli military spokesperson said that 4 rockets had been fired from Gaza, and 2 had crashed inside of Israel, which means the other 2 landed in Gaza. In Jerusalem, this says Palestinian, but we know better, a Muslim, driving an evacuator, ran over and killed an Israeli and overturned a bus. And this is an excavator. I don't think I mispronounced that, and I'm sorry. A Muslim driving an excavator deliberately ran over and killed an Israeli and then overturned a bus. It was a terrorist attack. Police shot the excavator driver dead. Several hours later, a gunman shot and wounded a soldier near Jerusalem's Hebrew University before fleeing on a motorcycle. Muslims. It is a death cult. It has always been a death cult. Several hours later, Israel announced that it would do its best to maintain a humanitarian ceasefire, to free up aid for some of the hundreds of thousands of, says Palestinians again, Muslims, displaced by almost 4 weeks of war to go home. The military is wrapping up the main objective of the ground assault, the destruction of cross-border infiltration tunnels and weapons tunnels from Gaza, and has told residents of some towns, yeah, go home. The spokesperson for Benjamin Netanyahu said, but, you know, it's not over. We're going to stay here until there is a prolonged period of quiet. We'll return in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Since this lie of Palestinian and Palestine is so prominent, it's interesting to know, and I brought this up one day last week, that if it wasn't for the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, for Yahweh's revelation to humanity, the name Philistine, from which Palestinian is a corruption, wouldn't even be known. The community left absolutely no traces. They were not literate, so there is no literary, historical, archaeological means to even identify their existence. Their name isn't recorded in Egypt. It's not recorded in Assyria. It's only recorded in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. So that would mean, if you were a logical and informed person, that you would have to deal with the fact that the accounting in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms said, yes, these people named Philistines did exist. They were in all likelihood derivative of the Phoenician culture that moved a little further south. And the Phoenicians in all likelihood were Grecian in their ethnicity and in their culture. So it would be that's the single greatest likelihood. The second would be that they just were Egyptians, and the Egyptians moved up the coast for the express purpose of putting military outposts in the region that is now Gaza, because almost all of their most formidable foes, the Hittites, Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians, later the Greeks, and even the Romans, would have to come through the Gaza area to enter Egypt. And so to have an outpost there was made sense. So they, in all likelihood, they were either a tribe of Egyptians, the Philistines were, or a group broken off from the Phoenicians. And The only way that they're known is through the accounting, the Philistine, that is presented in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And it shows that the Assyrians annihilated them in around 500 BCE. Now, this is affirmed by the fact that the Greeks took, and they, by the way, they had annihilated them not because Philistia was considered a prize. It's because of the constant infighting between Egypt and Assyria. And Yisrael, particularly the northern kingdom, was caught in the middle of that, with Yisrael forming allegiances with Egypt to dissuade the brutality of the Assyrians. And it didn't work out well for the northern kingdom. They were obliterated by Assyria. Now, the affirmation that the small community known as the Philistines were wiped out at that time is that in the 300 period BCE, Alexander the Great, who was specifically great at chronicling his atrocities, he went down through this area. He began by besieging Tyre, which was one of his most famous and most ruthless assaults. He had to build a causeway to get to the city, and when he finally got there, he was a savage. And then the next town down was a community that served as an Egyptian outpost. And it was in, that was the only inhabited place that he encountered on his way to Egypt. The northern kingdom had been obliterated, so it was this one outpost, and it was an Egyptian outpost at the time. He ravaged them as well, killing everybody. So there was, by 330 BCE, absolute proof that there were no such things as a Philistine. So you cannot be a Philistine today. It's the civilization was wiped out. And to call yourself that requires you to adhere to something that's in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms and no place else. But if you use something there that you claim to be true, then you can't pluck it out from the rest of the book, which repetitively says that Yisrael was given by Yahweh to the Israelites, to the descendants of Abraham, of Yishak and Jacob. And so you have to be wholly irrational to use the title and yet not to to ascribe the fact that Yisrael doesn't belong to them, but instead belongs to the Israelites, the descendants of Abraham, of Yishak and Jacob, making the title a very poor choice for these people, so long as enough people today were actually rational. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is a really interesting development. It's interesting, really, in two regards. And there are two very profoundly important stories, both emanating out of Syria and Iraq today. Here's the first of them. The Lebanese army advanced on Monday into a border town that was attacked by Islamists at the weekend, in the most serious spillover in the three-year-old Syrian war into Lebanon. And the Beirut government said the deadly assault would not go unpunished. That's interesting that Muslims are always focused on punishment. With army reinforcements arriving at Arsal, Prime Minister Tamam Salam, a Sunni Muslim, said that there would be no political solutions with the Sunni radicals identified as members of, catch this, the Nusra Front and the Islamic State, which has seized wide areas of Syria and Iraq. So what are they saying? I mean, is this Sunni Muslim prime minister of Lebanon saying that he is going to side with the Shias and is going to use the army of Lebanon to pursue the cause of Shias over Sunnis? Is he saying that al-Nusra and the Islamic State are now unified as opposed to fighting one another, since he says that there'd be no political solutions with either of them? You know, what in the world is going on? Quote, the only solution proposed today is withdrawal of the militants from Arsal and its environs, said Salam, the most senior Sunni in Lebanese politics. Flanked by the rest of the cabinet, Salam accused the militants of seeking to move their Sikh practices into Lebanon. Now, claims to be a Sunni Muslim. The Sunnis from al-Nusra and the Islamic State are fundamentalist Muslims. If they've got a Sikh practice, their practice is Sharia. I would agree that Sharia and Islam are Sikh, that they're perverted, that they are our most deadly plague that has ever been unleashed on humankind. But that doesn't change the fact that their plague is Islam. Goes on to say, we confirm that the attack on Lebanese national dignity will not go unpunished. Lebanon is still rebuilding, of course, from its own civil war that raged between 1975 and 1990, which was between rival Muslim sects, Sunni and Shia, as well as between Muslims and the Christian population in Lebanon. The Muslims, of course, prevailed over the Christians. But there is still internal conflict between Sunni and Shia. But in Lebanon, since the Shia have assassinated most of the Sunni politicians with a backbone, you find very little Sunni influence. So this particular individual, while he might identify himself with Sunni Islam, has to be a proponent of the Shiites, or Hezbollah would not allow him to live. The story continues, but this was the first major incursion by hardline Sunni militants who have become leading players in the Sunni-Shiite violence that has unfolded across the Levant, they say, destabilizing Lebanon by inflaming its own sectarian tensions. Lebanon is fully destabilized. I mean, the most powerful influence in Lebanon is Hezbollah, Allah's party, a Shiite terrorist organization. And the reality is that the Sunni militants aren't hardliners. They're simply Islamic fundamentalists. The soldiers advancing into Arsal found the bodies of 50 militants, a Lebanese security official said. The army said that 14 soldiers has been killed, with 22 others missing and 86 injured in the fighting, which erupted after security forces arrested a Syrian Islamist rebel commander on Saturday. Now, you have to wonder, you know, you've got the Islamic State. It's had great successes throughout Syria and Iraq. It has surrounded Baghdad, but hasn't attacked Baghdad, which is exactly what I suspected was going to happen. This group of Islamists, unfortunately, the Islamic State, is way too disciplined, way too savvy to overextend itself. But what does that mean? Well, the first thing that one does is, if one's going to take another giant step forward in a military endeavor, you have to make certain that your rear is protected, as are your flanks. If your flanks are vulnerable and your rear is vulnerable, then to take an aggressive step forward is almost always fatal. Well, what's the rear? The rear is Lebanon. And so the Islamic State, if indeed they are now unifying with al-Nusra, then the fact is that they need to protect their rear before they would advance on Babylon. And the rear would be large Shiite support communities along the border with Lebanon. Now, that's what this community was. It's almost exclusively Shiite, and so they attacked it. And so the Lebanese government said, no, 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 you can't play that way. We're now going to engage, and we're going to go against you because Lebanon is controlled by Hezbollah. So they managed to deploy their military. Now, the flank is the other interesting story that came out of this day, which is that the Kurds, who had been the only successful implement brought against the Islamic State, lost. And they lost not only control of a dam, but lost control of several cities and of additional oil refinery sites. And so you find the Kurds pleading with America to send them weapons to go and defend what they view as an independent homeland. And yet you've got the central government now, the Shiite government of Iran, of Iraq, which is really Iran West, saying don't do that. In fact, the Kurds actually sent a shipment of oil to America to be refined, and the U.S. courts, at the behest of the Iraqi government, took the oil, sent the ship away, just confiscated the oil. So America doesn't want an independent Kurdistan, and yet the Kurds have been the most effective fighters against the Islamic State, and recently they just got pummeled. And so now that we see the rear being addressed and the flanks being protected, what's next for the Islamic State? And when we see them operating in this kind of way, shouldn't we take notice that this is a serious foe to be reckoned with? This particular article talks about this, the Syrian soldiers advancing into Arsal, that the first thing that they leave in their wake is 50 dead. Now, that's not exactly the way to endear yourself with a formidable foe. More than a dozen other members of the security forces have been taken hostage. So in retaliation, the al-Nusra and or the Islamic State have kidnapped members of the army to use them as negotiating ploys. The army described the Islamist excursion as a long-planned attack. Yeah, it's the Islamic State is a savvy group of Muslims. It's the most disciplined, the most effective Islamic terrorist organization probably in the history of the religion, being certainly more savvy, better armed, more popular, being better financed than any Islamic organization throughout time. The militants were beaten back in the border area in the past year by the Syrian government when the Syrian government employed Hezbollah. But that is not the case on this particular attack. There are some 3,000 members of either al-Nusra or the Islamic State or both that remain now in the border area. This report says that thick plumes of gray and black smoke billowed from the tops of hills where Arsal lies, which means that the Lebanese military used artillery against the town. Intermittent bursts of gunfire could be heard as well. A dozen armored personnel carriers were seen advancing towards the town, together with a similar number of other military vehicles and trucks, Humvees. Soldiers armed with assault rifles and rocket-propelled grenades sat atop the vehicles as they moved along the main roads towards Arsal. So we have an expansion of the Syrian civil war that America started by invading Iraq, giving Iraq to Iran, and that countries like Qatar and Saudi Arabia and Turkey elevated from political dissent to a proxy war by providing American weapons. It has now spilled into Lebanon. It will spill into Jordan. It's only a matter of time. In a statement, the army said that they had taken full control of a school that militants had seized during the incursion. Arsal is mainly a Sunni town on the Lebanese border between the Syrian government-controlled territories and the Lebanese Shiite areas sympathetic to Hezbollah. It's a gateway to a place that there is 100,000 Syrian refugees. The Syrian activists in the area say the refugee camps have been heavily damaged in the fighting. So here's the government, and also by government backed by Hezbollah and of Lebanon, and al-Nusra and the Islamic State on the other side. And the greatest number of casualties, the greatest amount of damage, is in a refugee camp occupied by 100,000 war-weary civilians. And yet we did not hear a single statement from the United Nations or the United States condemning the actions on either side. Welcome back to Shattering Mess. I said there was a second development that was earth-changing, landscape-changing, as it relates to the Islamic State and the enormous gains that they have made throughout a region of about 25,000 square miles in what was Syria and Iraq, now simply being called the Islamic State. This is from Reuters. Islamic State fighters seized control of Iraq's largest dam, an oil field, and three more towns on Sunday, after inflicting their first major defeat on Kurdish forces since sweeping through the region in June. Folks, this is big news. For the past several months, we have been following the developments of the Islamic State. And I have done my utmost to try to dispel myths, one of which is that the Islamic State was once an Al-Qaeda organization. It never was. One, to dispel the myth that America was on the right side of this conflict. It isn't. The fact is that America armed the Islamic State coming and going. Petraeus, who came up with the Awakening Program to support the siege, whereby Sunni tribesmen and warlords were provided with an enormous amount of American weaponry during the Iraqi Civil War that took place after the American invasion. And it was said that they were to use those weapons to hunt down al-Qaeda in their midst, which they never did. But instead, those weapons became a means for them to thwart the military power of the Shiite government that America had empowered. And so it was a standoff, if you will. The Shia military that America established in Iraq was unable to wipe out the Sunnis because America armed the Sunnis. But once America left, those Sunnis retained their arms. And the government of Iraq became ever more belligerent towards the Sunnis, actually using American weapons, attack helicopters and artillery, to bomb Sunni communities in places like Fallujah, for example. So American weapons were used by the government America established to bomb, to blast civilian communities in Fallujah. And so the Sunni Muslims who had at one time led that country, had been the basis of its government and its military and its infrastructure, started to resist. Now, across the border, and now it's now a non-existent border, into Syria, America wanted to topple Assad. And so it began to arm the Sunni Muslims in a proxy war to bring down the Shiite influence that we had created in Syria. You see, Syria was at one time a client of Iraq when Iraq was controlled by a Sunni dictator in Saddam Hussein. They were both Ba'athists. But when America toppled Saddam Hussein and gave Iraq to Iran, it fundamentally changed the balance of Shiite-Sunni influence in the heart of Islam, giving Syria and control over Syria to the Iranians. It caused the Turks and the Egyptians and the Saudi Arabians and the Kuwaitis and the Qataris to have a conniption fit and wanted to resolve that problem because they see Shia Islam as the enemy. And so they got American weapons to be funneled into that conflict, and they were given to Sunni Mujahideen. Well, the Sunni Mujahideen turned out to be two primary organizations. There was al-Nusra, which we heard about earlier today, and also the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. And so America empowered them on the other side of the border, unable to figure out that one day they would simply ignore the border, unify with the Awakening Program beneficiaries, and take it to America's Shiite government, which they have done. We'll continue this story after the news and commercials.